Jeffrey Weiss with me, folks, poli-sci prof from a Des Moines area community college. Cuba, and who knows, we're recording this program on Monday, Memorial Day, and who knows where this situation may end up by the time this program broadcasts on our affiliate stations around the nation, Wednesday, Thursday, and beyond. But as of now, Cuba, a very volatile situation. And the most recent kind of piece of shocking news is the charges filed against a 94-year-old retired Cuban president, Raul Castro. And, you know, there's so many things here that are disturbing, where it might go, where it's been. Jeffrey, what's your take on the situation in Cuba?
Well, when we were talking about Iran, one of the things that Iranian officials have said, and time is on their side, is that if they can delay or make things difficult for the United States, they can also protect Cuba, which is interesting because it sort of takes us back to, you know, the days of the Cold War, you know, where you would have countries that would align against imperialist countries, or, you know, like
the Soviet Union,
the United States. And so, you know, a lot of the rhetoric when it comes to Cuba is really that sort of anti-colonial. I mean, because the United States pretty much ran Cuba, you know, up until 1959.
Spain did.
Yeah, exactly.
Spain did, was the first imperial colonizers.
Yeah. Well, in the United States from, 1898 roughly until 1959 was, you know, you have your flag, we have your economy, is a way of putting it. We'll even make your flag look a little bit like ours. But ever since the United States sort of lost that playground, you know, Republicans and Democrats and Kennedy and the big
when
names
say,
and money.
You mean, go to Che Guevara.
Fidel Castro. Yeah, but
yeah.
Before 1959, you had, you know, 25,000 prostitutes on the streets of Havana. It was a playground for rich, you know,
during the Batista
people.
Regime.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the United States has never forgiven Cuba for its independence, but also its economic nationalism. You know, it doesn't really matter if you're a capitalist or a socialist or a communist, whatever you are, if you believe in sovereignty, economic sovereignty, or an economic nationalist, sort of in the style of Alexander Hamilton, you're a threat to U.S. business interests because your country's land, labor, and resources should be accessible to U.S. business. Then you're our friend, no matter, you know, how many of your own people you're killing or what death squads you set up, et cetera, El Salvador, Guatemala, et cetera, as long as you do business with us. So, you know, there's a great document years ago that noted that Cuba's threat is its example. You know, that if other countries take their own resources and produce and distribute and kick Budweiser out and make their own beer, or kick Pepsi out and make their own pop,
and
it's a threat to U.S. business.
And take land that has been basically stolen by foreign imperialists and, you know, redistribute that to indigenous farmers, to local people.
Exactly.
I mean, that's very very threatening to the U.S. I mean, we saw when that happened in Guatemala, when the government of José Arbenz, I believe I have his name correct, when he took control of the government in Guatemala, they began to, you know, redistribute some of the land that the United Fruit Company owned but wasn't using.
Right.
And that was bad enough to inspire the CIA to initiate a coup and overthrow the Arbenz government.
Yeah, 1954, United Fruit, or Mossadegh in Iran, 1953, Allende in 1973 in Chile.
Yeah.
So, you know, the difficult thing that Cuba has that definitely makes it not Iran, of course, on many levels, is that it's an island. It's a population of about 9.5 million. They've lost, you know, a lot of people recently from migration, but also it's so close to the United States. So the United States has had so much power to restrict other countries from doing any business with Cuba. Right now, essentially, it's not called an oil blockade, but it's pretty much that. You know, as you take Venezuelan oil out of Cuba's economy, you threaten Mexico not to sell oil. So, you know, the United States uses the power of the petrodollar and the power of the dollar as the dominant currency in the world to punish countries when it can, you know, and Cuba is a country that can really easily be isolated and punished. And so Cuba's in an extremely difficult situation. I mean,
but we've been punishing Cuba since 1959.
Right.
And they've survived. At first with the help of the Soviet Union, which collapsed in 1989, and yet Cuba has survived.
They have the real difficult thing for Cuba now is the stranglehold on energy that the United States has. And the really...
Oil specifically.
Absolutely. Yeah. And really the, how would I say, you know, the revolution itself, you know, was more successful in terms of the solidarity of the population, you know, anti-colonial, you know, before cell phones, you know, and because cell phones tend to create, just like in our society, a more of a individualistic, living in a vacuum, kind of a human being, and more of a consumeristic, you know, lifestyle. And so, you know, we'll see where this goes. I don't imagine the United States using military force against Cuba as long as Iran continues and also the World Cup. But,
World Cup.
You know, but at right. the same time, you know, this administration has two more years.
Well,
and
unless,
you know,
J.D. Vance takes over.
Well, and Cuba is no threat to the United States. We right. know that.
So
I mean,
why won't the Trump administration try to do the same thing it did in Venezuela? Basically, you know, going in, capturing in this case, Maduro, the president of Venezuela, and interestingly, replacing him with his vice president. So basically, right. regime change? No, not so much. Just changing the person in charge of the regime.
Right.
Why won't they try to do the same thing in Cuba?
They may. They may. And
they've already got this indictment against 94-year-old Raul Castro.
Yeah. No, I mean, we don't know what will happen, especially the last 2 years of this administration, but it is possible that they'll do this. And depending on how many civilians they kill in the process, the Cuban people may be like the Iranians, where we say, you know, we're not super fond of our government, but we like Iran more, you know, or we're not super fond of our government, but we like Cuba more. And, you know, any kind of a land invasion or something like that could be very costly to whoever is involved and whoever's on the ground in another illegal war.
And I know you've been to Cuba, and I'm always shocked by this. I was shocked that, and I've read about how the rebels accomplished the overthrow of Batista, and it's almost amazing that they pulled it off. But what's mostly amazing is that the U.S. wasn't able to stop it, and that even after Fidel Castro, along with Che Guevara and others, other revolutionaries were installed. It's just amazing that the U.S. government didn't just come in and say, no, we're not going to have any of this. I mean, we've done that in other countries.
Yeah.
How did Cuba get away with this?
Yeah. I mean, I think there were a lot of factors that, you know, Cuba had some real strong political leadership that, in terms of guerrilla warfare, decided you don't kill civilians. You know, that won't make you popular. You know?
Yeah.
And really, you know, the situation of, 58% literacy, you know, people in Cuban rural areas, especially being in a lot of poverty, you know, life expectancy, you know, barely 55 or something like that. There was considerable deprivation, and the revolution took place over a long period of time. And really, the U.S. intelligence and the elite, which was, you know, was too busy chasing prostitutes on the streets of Havana rather than, you know, reading intelligence, really underestimated the power of the movement, which was a popular revolution, you know. And I mean, I became interested in Cuba in the 90s when I was looking at World Health Organization statistics, and Cuba had a life expectancy that was about the same as the United States. And I said, this can't be right because their per capita income is only 2,000. So, you know, I went to Cuba two times. The second time I went illegally, when I was a student, we challenged the travel ban. We essentially said, arrest us if you want to. Treasury Department confiscated.
Didn't?
No, it was Global Exchange. It was Medea Benjamin that helps to run Code Pink now. Their organization... the Treasury Department confiscated all of our money. They threatened us to go. When our delegation was able to get money from other places, Cubana Airlines flew us there. My interest at the time was that freedom. I mean, I grew up believing in this, in talking about this F word that we don't talk about much anymore, called freedom. You know, everything is safety now, right? I sometimes say to my students, like, you can be safe in North Korea. You know, you can still dance salsa in North Korea and go out. If you want safety, you know, you can find it. everything is safety now, but freedom was a thing when I was a kid. And so I was like, yeah, why are we not free to go to Cuba? You know, people from all around the world visit there. So I said, I'll be free, right? We weren't arrested. We were harassed when
by
we
who?
Came back. The TSA people at the airport, Medea Benjamin's daughter was like 14. She had a shirt on Cuba, and they told her in public to take her shirt off. And she started crying, et cetera. So they harassed certain people more than others.
Why did they want to take her shirt off?
Well, because she bought it in Cuba. And if you go to Cuba illegally, you cannot buy any Cuban products and bring them back. And her shirt was made in Cuba. So I guess what I'm saying is the TSA people were a little petty, or the border people, because they were picking on teenagers. Mm. And, you know, they picked on Medea more. They sent probably somebody to sit with me on one of my trips who asked a lot of questions. And anyhow, I just sort of laughed. And my luggage was lost for long periods of time at O'Hare.
Mysteriously.
On my way back. Yeah, exactly. But I was entertained by all of it. because I grew up in a country that, you know, you read Jefferson, you read the founders. I mean, whatever one wants to say about the founders of this country, you know, people cannot exist both ignorant and free. I mean, they had a lot of strong ideas, you know.
So one more question. Do you think Cuba is going to be able to withstand whatever kind of pressure the Trump administration brings against it?
That's an excellent question. And really, I don't know. And what discourages me about saying to you, I don't know, is 10 years ago, I would have said yes. 20 years ago, I would have said yes. 30 years ago, I would have said yes. But I really don't know now, because the level of deprivation is...
In this country?
In Cuba.
Oh, in
the
Cuba.
Level
okay.
of deprivation
okay.
in
yeah.
Cuba is at a point where...
Revolution.
It could be that the Cubans say whatever comes after this might not be as bad as what we're living with. And if we live on the doorsteps of the United States of America, this is sort of the price we pay for our sovereignty.
Yeah. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us today, folks. Jeffrey Weiss has been my guest.